The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
What happens when artificial intelligence and architecture meet? My guest, Sanada Karik, is an architectural designer at Perkins & Will with experience in leading architectural projects through programming, design, documentation, and construction. And she has a special interest in AI applications that are applicable to architecture. In fact, she has spearheaded a research initiative to address the use of AI in different phases of design, the impact of biases, and the process of implementing AI systems. So interesting discussion. I had Sanada Karik. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me.
Let me ask you about using AI in architecture. Is this a situation where you would actually go to an open AI or some type of intermediary and say, this is the kind of work we do. These are the kind of things we're looking to accomplish. And they design an AI system or bot that works specifically for the architecture industry.
I would say, I think there have been several architecture AI tools that have been developed using OpenAI. I think Giraffe has been a tool that's been developed for urban design.
So these already exist. Okay.
Yeah. And
how long
exists? Yeah.
How long have they existed?
I would say a little over a year now.
They
came to my mind a little over, or they came to my computer a little over a year ago. So
do you have a sense for how this all happens? I mean, you've got these purveyors of artificial intelligence, and they obviously feel that they can be applied to virtually anything in life. So why did those particular systems get built or designed? Was it because the architecture industry had said, hey, we could use something like this at some point? Or was this designed and then just offered up to architecture firms? Do you have any sense of how the whole thing evolved?
I would say it's a mix. I think some of the tools started out as individuals and groups kind of designing these tools for that could be used in the architecture process. And then I think some of it is like the actual architecture firms saying like, hi, we need some type of tool to help with our iteration process or our schematic design process. And they've had the resources to kind of speak to designers and develop them.
So what's the potential of AI in terms of, well, let's start with architecture. I think there's a lot around architecture, such as land use, urban design, transportation. But when it comes to actually the design work on a building or a complex, what do you see as the potential impact of AI? What can it, in theory at least, help you do in a bigger or better or faster way?
I think the opportunities are honestly limitless. I think from my research, one of the first things that I looked into was kind of creating more energy efficient and sustainable buildings, and looking at how AI algorithms could analyze building performance data, like energy consumption patterns and thermodynamics, to optimize designs for energy efficiency and sustainability. And then I think in terms of land use, you see like enhanced planning and simulation. A lot of our design process involves creating digital twins because we need we need site context to create any type of design. And so if we have digital twins that allow for the simulation of various scenarios in a risk-free virtual environment, that means we can test these different planning scenarios and understand potential impacts and then adjust before any real-world implementation, which saves a lot of time and resources. And then I think we also, in terms of like site analysis, you can use aerial imagery and extract the imagery of buildings and roads to identify populations and infrastructure at risk for any potential natural disaster events. And that could be used to you could use that information in urban planning. And then you could also, I think something that has been would be really useful in some of the projects I'm working on right now is converting any aerial data taken from large surveys and then automatically turning them into CAD drawings. So it seems like AI technology has the ability to kind of drone map a site and then automatically turn it into a CAD drawing that we can very quickly start proposing new ideas on. And it's similar with
CAD,
urban design.
A CAD drawing being computer assisted design.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Let me ask you about digital twins, because I've heard of it before. I think I even knew what it was before. I don't know now. Explain what a digital twin is and what the purpose is.
So a digital twin is essentially a kind of virtual replica of physical assets or systems, and then they facilitate real-time monitoring and analysis. So it's we have these three-dimensional tools where we can essentially build a virtual twin, a digital twin of our site. Or so if we, especially if we have a large-scale project, so with urban design projects, we might need to build a replica of a city or of several blocks. And so you integrate GIS and AI to provide kind of dynamic insights into the urban environments, infrastructure conditions, and spatial relationships, which enable more informed decision-making in land use and urban planning.
Now, based on what you said about, you know, AI being able to just produce a CAD layout, I forget the exact terminology you used, but it sounds to me like the speed of being able to design a building or a housing development or what have you would be accelerated. Is that correct?
Yes. This is AI will definitely streamline a lot of our processes. And I think creating, and this is one of them, kind of the pipeline between site analysis and drawings. It can take months. And AI can make that take weeks or even days, honestly. It is kind of incredible to think about.
Now, let me ask you about the actual design work, because AI clearly can produce creative ideas. People are able to ask AI to just, you know, create this for me, or they have a concept, they give it some words, and it produces a design. Obviously, architecture, great architecture has to do with great design as well. I mean, functionality for sure, but also great design. Is it possible, now I'll take a leap of faith here, faster production of the design work, lowering the cost of that, and maybe, not only faster production, but more creative design that maybe bring down the cost of not only architectural services, but perhaps bring down the cost of the actual construction of a building that has some real creative design to it. Say most buildings are boxes. Most commercial buildings are boxes. They're not icons of design. Would this potentially create what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a new epic in the way of design, beautiful cities and design, and being able to actually produce these things at a reasonable cost with some greater speed.
I think there is the potential for reducing costs, at least from architectural services. I remember, I think, discussing this with some colleagues a while back, thinking, oh, we might be able to make architecture more affordable, which would be great, because a lot of times we're just working with developers and institutions because our services are so expensive. And AI could make our services much more affordable to people. I think in terms of the cost of the building, I think a lot of that is influenced. While the services element is influenced in it, I think it's also the cost of materials that is still pretty important, which I think AI could contribute to reducing the cost of materials. It would be different in terms of our services, but I think it's also AI could change, like, because what are architecture services really worth? Like, it's thinking about how many people you're employing, and then thinking in terms of if that person is using AI, or if you're working with a firm that has developed their own AI, are you kind of paying them for their tool? I think so. A big firm like Perkins and Will, we have the resources to develop our own tools that no other firms use. And so, I mean, I would hope that our services would become more affordable, but I think it's still a little too early to tell how it will change the architecture, engineering, and construction industry economically. Just at least the current path that we're on, it's hard to tell.
Right. And then there is the there's smart materials. There's the design and implementation of smart materials, yeah. Self-healing concrete and so on. Windows that are actually solar collectors, but you can't even see the elements within them that collect the solar energy. I would imagine that these are materials that probably Perkins and Will works with on certain projects. What about that? Do you expect that AI? I realize we're doing some speculation here, Sonata, yeah. But I'm wondering if you would foresee AI being able to enhance the value of these materials, just in terms of performance, but also perhaps in terms of making them more widely available because of cost reductions.
I guess it does depend on the material. So if these are materials that you can build in a lab, so those are materials that you can kind of procure anywhere. There are some materials though that I personally prioritize kind of regional materials, just because I think that's a way to reduce any potential environmental impact. And I know that our office, we're always really excited about mass timber projects because there's so much timber to use within Washington. And I'm sure my colleagues in other offices at Perkins and Will are equally excited about local materials as well. So if it's and so AI could help with kind of, I guess, streamlining some of the processes in terms of procuring materials, making sure that we and our clients understand what materials are, what materials work best in the environment that we are designing in, what materials are easiest to procure and cheapest to procure. And then the experimental materials like self-healing concrete, and then the solar windows, I think AI could potentially help with being able to replicate that process in different climates. I think kind of being able to, because I know that different materials perform differently in different climates. So you have to kind of, AI would be able to help maybe make suggestions or modifications so that different buildings can still perform at their most optimal, no matter the climate.
What about land use and urban design and transportation? I think you may mention that AI could also influence those.
Yes.
In what ways do you think you might see that play out?
I think in urban design, I think similar to kind of the land use with digital twins, you use urban prototyping, which is a method to study different compositions and strategies. That's kind of one of the most likely or most promising applications of AI in urban planning. There's a Singapore-based technology company called Digital Blue Foam that they introduced a urban prototyping tool called Urban Insights that operates by assimilating data from various open sources, which enables project teams to generate urban scenarios and compare the quality of different locations. And then this collaborates with experts to ensure a thorough and scientific analysis of the project. I think you'll also see kind of some opportunities for community engagement between urban planners and locals. So you can use VR or augmented reality to assist residents in visualizing proposed changes, and then they can provide feedback very quickly. And then that kind of allows for a more participatory planning process. Then you also, with infrastructure planning, so Columbia's National Planning Department implemented a pioneering pilot project that combined aerial mapping with urban diagnostics to address the challenge of informal settlements in their country. The project revealed that about 85% of areas identified by the algorithmic maps coincided with those verified and outlined by local experts. So this accuracy was sufficient to recognize and prioritize those areas, requiring public policies for space improvement. And so then this, so they use this kind of project to create this software, which is automated mapping of informal settlements with AI. And then in order to facilitate the automated detection and mapping of informal settlements. Then I think probably what I think is most promising for AI in urban design, I would say, would be resilience and climate adaptation. So AI can assist cities in responding to the impacts of climate change, which we'll see a lot more. So we can use predictive modeling, risk assessment, and early warning systems powered by AI to contribute to enhancing our resilience against extreme weather events. And each, like, I think every city in America probably has different types of threats. So you need AI to be able to make those rapid choices and based on those analysis. So Google's Tree Canopy, which is powered by AI, was a tool that was designed to aid urban planners by mitigating the impact of extreme heat waves. So it integrated into Google's Environmental Insights Explorer, combines AI with aerial images of cities, and which enables governments to understand the tree coverage and facilities, or sorry, facilitates more effective planning for if you want new trees in different parts of the city. Then I think AI also will have a big influence in how we plan our transportation. So I think I'm a big proponent of multimodal transportation. I love planning for mass transit. I'm all about trains. I'm very excited about some of the projects that have been proposed in the US. And I think AI can help with optimizing traffic flow. So you can use AI algorithms to analyze real-time data from various sources like sensors, traffic cameras, GPS devices. And then you can use these smart systems to manage traffic systems dynamically, adjusting signal timings, rerouting vehicles, reducing congestion, and improving efficiency. You can also use them for kind of enhanced parking space allocation. So traditional parking systems often rely on fixed schedules and limited data, leading to inefficient utilization of parking resources. So AI could leverage real-time data from sensors, cameras, mobile apps to provide dynamic allocation of parking spaces. Then you can also use it to make it safer on smaller scales for cyclists and pedestrians. So you can use AI to study road and bike trail data, like traffic flow, high-risk areas, optimal routes. And then you can identify patterns of use and problematic areas and enable better planning for infrastructure improvements to allow for more cyclists to feel safer on the road. And then with pedestrians, you can use pedestrian proximity detection systems, which identify potential risks without reliance on special apparel or wearable tags, which is being used by a lot of autonomous vehicle companies right now. And so this ensures universal and reliable safety. And then it kind of alerts drivers and pedestrians to avoid health and safety issues. For real estate, I'm not a huge expert in it, but from the research that I've done for this podcast, I know that you can use generative AI to you can apply it to a repository of lease documents, which can be normally dense and filled with bespoke terminology, making it difficult for owners to sift through and find information quickly. And so you can use a Gen AI powered tool to summarize key themes across the leasage, such as how much is rent, and then what market forces could affect the leases. And then the tool can scan across the leases for a particular parameter, like again with rent. So you can kind of compile all the information that you need. And then you can also use it for customer engagement. So you can help a potential tenant visualize exactly what an apartment would look like, especially if they're a tenant from out of state. A lot of people are moving between cities a lot more, so you can use this to kind of help them visualize what their home will look like. You can also use it to kind of create plans. So I think there have been a lot of really interesting tools, like Make It AI has been used to develop residential plans, and so you can kind of produce sensors and algorithms that collect data points on space use, such as how customers move through a store before purchase or when conference rooms are used in an office. And then this insight can then be fed into the tool, an AI tool, and then overlaid with special data about square footage, location, walls, furniture, and other architectural elements. And then the human architects and designers can work from these plans to ensure art and emotion into the design. But they'll be using a lot less guesswork, whether the space is purpose-driven.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of exciting stuff going on there. When it comes to land use or design, a city, hopefully a city, applies a lot of forethought and design work. But what we've seen in cities across the country is that they get kind of hollowed out in the middle.
Yes.
Something called donut cities.
Yes.
And talk a little bit about that and whether, I don't know if AI could be used to try to turn the tide back on that one so that we can fill in that donut hole and bring downtown. There's a lot of downtowns that have just basically just withered away.
Seattle is one of them. So
is that right? Talk about that.
Yeah. So the donut effect is that it's a significant shift in demand for goods and services towards less dense surrounding areas. And I would argue this was exacerbated by the pandemic. The downtowns have been experiencing signs of this hollowing out, as you said, after decades of reinvestment in population. And so COVID contributed to this decline by draining commercial offices due to remote and hybrid work schedules. And then that resulted in reduced office occupancy, shrinking lunchtime crowds, slumping retail sales, and decreased public transit ridership, sped up the kind of downward spiral that the cities were in. Because I think technology was already going to enable that. COVID just forced us to enable it a lot quicker. And so tightened city finances and increased service demands are leading to this donut city, where the city center loses residents and businesses to the suburbs. And this is really bad for the environment, because this contributes to urban sprawl, because this is just kind of enables more auto-centric infrastructure. So it's where people need a car to get around. And so it's not a repeat of past urban decay, I would argue that, but it does present new challenges. So I think we are facing kind of growing demands for services such as addressing homelessness and issues with law enforcement. So San Jose, despite its tech-driven economy, struggles with low office return rates and layoffs, which impacts commercial occupancy and city revenues. There are cities all over the country experiencing this, and not just in the U.S. The Birmingham, United Kingdom, is experiencing this as well. I think several other cities in Europe are experiencing this, and I think AI does have a role in kind of mitigating the effects of donut cities. From my opinion, on at least based on the research, is that like it will be mainly to assist the people who are kind of tasked with mitigate with kind of solving this issue. So any solution regarding downtown revitalization at all must involve engaging the population. So you need to ask locals what it is that brings them downtown in the first place and what it is that keeps them from downtown. So different cities will have different attractions and different repellents. I think Seattle, we have a lot of issues with crime. I think in our downtowns, we have a lot of issues with homelessness in our downtowns. And then it's also, I mean, most cities have this problem, but it's also very loud. And the cities aren't necessarily downtowns. A lot of American downtowns aren't really designed for pedestrians. So you don't really feel safe if you're just walking or even if you're cycling. I know Seattle is an example of that. You do have these pockets of higher urban development where you feel a lot safer as a pedestrian, but they're not well connected. And so there's really, you don't have a lot of spaces where you feel safe. So I think AI can streamline kind of the three key themes of urban revitalization, which is local context, accelerators of impact, and concentration of investment. So from local context, I think you need to build broad coalitions to ensure longevity. Any project that involves a whole city is going to take years, maybe even decades. So you need to make sure that you have a mix of dedicated stakeholders both inside and outside of City Hall to help investment stay the course during times of political administration turnover, which is inevitable. And then you also, I think gentrification is always going to be a concern whenever you're doing any type of development in urban areas. So you want to have organizations that are committed to proactively mitigating any displacement risks. So responses must be proactive and community specific. The displacement risk in a city with rising rental prices and an influx of new residents is much higher than in a city where there is overall population loss. And then I think for accelerators of impact with cluster investments, so revitalization efforts are more likely to have a transformational impact when they are geographically concentrated and sustained over a longer period. So the successes can build upon one another and create broader momentum. Sustained investments in the creation and dedicated downtown organizations are particularly beneficial. And then you also want to support multiple organizations that are working towards shared goals. Just you don't want to kind of put all your eggs in one basket. And then you also want to kind of cultivate relationships with educational anchors. So fostering relationships and strengthening university connections can yield significant and sustained improvement in downtown vibrancy and growth. Here in Seattle, I think the city has a really good relationship with the University of Washington, which has done a lot of work to kind of revitalize their surrounding urban fabric. So the university district has been a huge development over the past decade in Seattle, and now has a light rail stop, and it has a lot of growing more affordable housing and a lot of growing economic activity there. And that's within the city limits, as opposed to a lot of the places that have been developing on that little donut. And then
on the outside of the donut. I mean,
yeah, on the outside of the donut. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for concentration of investment, you want to kind of embrace flexibility and innovation. So kind of flexible funding mechanisms like seed funding, small grants, learning opportunities, and pilot funding for new ideas are ways that social investors can support innovation and deliver wins for the community. Then you can achieve long-term impacts by investing in programming, arts, the public realm, and infrastructure. So the strategy of focusing on public realm improvements to existing urban assets such as parks, open spaces, art institutions has proven to be an effective path to building vibrancy. And then so you
a
need
lot,
those...
a lot of moving pieces, though.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of moving
so,
pieces. There's so many
yeah.
factors that you have to bring together
yeah.
to make these things work. It's it's a big ask, but we know more than ever, and we're getting assistance, technological assistance in the form of AI. So very interesting. So my guest has been Sonata Carrick. She's an architectural designer with Perkins and Will. And as you have heard, she's done a great deal of research. It was kind of like a fire hose, the amount of information that you have at your disposal, Sonata. And exciting that you're working on these AI applications. We're going to be interested in seeing how this all plays out and how big an impact it will have. And you've obviously spread out beyond just the design of buildings and into the city's land use, transportation systems and such. I appreciate you taking the time joining us and walking us through this.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. It was a pleasure.